This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Hurricane Wilma battered the Yucatan Peninsula for the better part of 2 days over the weekend. Today, the international airport in Cancun is finally open again. Mexican President Vicente Fox says he wants to get stranded tourists home. Yesterday, the storm raced across the southern part of Florida. Power is still out for more than 3 million people there. In some places, it could be out for some time. And while Wilma is now well out to sea in the Atlantic, it isn't done with us yet. Its energy is feeding into a nor'easter that's lashing Middle Atlantic and New England states that are already waterlogged from floods earlier this month. Our main focus today is cleaning up and moving on. If you were in the storm in Florida yesterday, call us with your story. If you're getting it today further north, we want to hear from you as well. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, we remember Rosa Parks. But first, Hurricane Wilma. At least 5 people are reported dead in Florida. The area between West Palm Beach and Miami appears to have been the hardest hit. President Bush plans to visit the area on Thursday. Joining us now to talk about how the state is recovering is Wanda DiMarzo, a reporter for the Miami Herald. She's at the Broward County Emergency Operations Center in Plantation, Florida. Nice of you to join us today.
Thank you.
Is there any way to categorize how much damage Wilma did to Florida?
It's catastrophic right now. They just, in fact, here at the Emergency Operations Center, put a map up showing portions of Broward that were hardest hit. And there's like 3 cities up in northern Broward that they're showing catastrophic damage, which means severe damage to homes, to almost, you know, every home affected, to trees down all over the roads. We have 1,500 traffic signals here in the county. They're all out.
All of them?
All of them.
What about power?
There is 98% of the county is without power. We have approximately 800,000 people here, and we have 1.5 million residents approximately, but there's over 800,000 without power.
Hurricanes and Florida are no strangers to each other, but were people really prepared for this?
No, they weren't. The mayor here of Broward County, Kristen Jacobs, did say earlier, and she told the lieutenant governor, who did make a visit here to the EOC, and is currently touring our county by helicopter along with FEMA, is also touring the county to assess the damage, said that I think because of all that we've had, this is a 5th hurricane, and the other ones, you know, everybody's told, be careful, prepare, you know, evacuate.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was very, you know, like weary of all the hurricanes and did not take this seriously.
Even after what we saw in New Orleans and Mississippi?
Even after that. A lot of the cities don't even have water, and people didn't fill their bathtubs up. They didn't prepare.
We had heard before the storm of a lot of, very difficult decisions made by the operators of nursing homes about whether to take the risks to evacuate the people who live there or to try to ride it out. Do you know of any problems?
No, actually, the nursing homes and the hospitals overall fared fairly well. In fact, in the Keys, they did evacuate those that were, you know, severely ill or unable to move about. The majority of the residents in the Keys, you know, opted to go ahead and ride it out, and now they're in severe straits down there.
Mm-hmm. People not taking this seriously. It's just weariness. They're convinced somehow that they're immortal, that it's not going to touch them?
I think that they were, just thinking, you know, it's going to be another one, a near miss, you know, nothing's going to happen. But when it came, you know, across here, it tore Broward up. The mayor said that we took a direct hit and that this is unprecedented. We haven't had anything like this in over 50 years.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation as well. 800-989-8255. Email us, totn@npr.org. Beverly's on the line with us from Miami.
Hi there. It's going to be a long time down here. Those of us who lived through Andrew and who lived where Andrew hit took it seriously.
Uh-huh. And so how did you prepare?
I closed my shutters. I brought in all my lawn furniture. I brought in everything that could fly, and I went to my sister's.
And you went to your sister's
who actually also has shutters and lives south of me, but I wasn't going to be alone. I wanted to be with my sister and brother-in-law. I sat through Katrina alone. You don't want to do this alone. It's frightening.
Yeah. And did you get through it okay?
We all got through it okay. Hey, after Andrew, you know, this is just, it's unpleasant. It could be a month without power, though. I can't imagine we'll wait quite that long. It's not fun without power in this world.
Wanda DiMarzo, we're hearing that in some places, a month without power. Why is that?
They said that FPNL took a very strong hit. Again, they're saying that it's unprecedented what happened to them as well, and that they actually have some of their substations were damaged. Also, before they can even start restoring power, they're going to have to restore the power lines that are down. We have actual, you know, lines down across the road.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to start fixing that. They said major grids, you know, power grids, were affected by the storm. We're hoping it's not going to take a month. We're hearing, though, to expect at least 1 week before we start seeing some of the power restored around here.
So, Beverly, what are you going to do?
Well, I have canned goods. I have propane, and I'm going to pray that my grocery store has cold food before my power comes back on.
Good luck to you, Beverly. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, I understand, Wanda DeMarza, that you attended a news conference there at the Emergency Operations Center with the lieutenant governor, other officials state officials. What do they have to say?
They're assessing the damage right now, but they said from what they've seen, it is extremely, extremely bad here in Broward County. They're also advising residents to stay off the roads because of the danger with traffic signals being down.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you're getting people, you know, impatient and blaring horns and running through traffic signals. And it's going to be very dangerous. You know, thank God we haven't heard of any serious accidents yet. But, you know, we're keeping a close eye on that because I'm afraid there are going to be accidents. There were last time when we experienced some outages, and they weren't even this severe.
We also have seen in crises like this, people lining up for gas that sometimes isn't there.
The gas, I didn't see any in northern Broward, to be honest with you, when I came in. Now I'm hearing that there are gas stations here in southern Broward, and yes, the lines are extremely long. At the distribution centers where they've put up for water and ice, lines are miles long. There's reports that they're actually running out in some areas.
Already?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is day one, really.
Yes.
And there are, of course, people with special needs, diabetics whose insulin has to be kept cold, other people, elderly, who are going to be worried about dehydration and that sort of thing?
Yeah. You know what, though, also, what we're seeing, too, is that the residents are being extremely generous. Up where I live, there's several people with generators that are actually helping and allowing their neighbors to hook up to them. We had, during the storm, a man who suffered a heart attack and unfortunately died when a tree fell on his house.
Mm-hmm.
He was so shocked, you know, and the neighbors cleared the road of all the trees and debris so that the ME's office, medical examiner, could get in and take the man from his home so that the wife or other family members didn't have to stay there, you know, with him in there.
Let's get another caller on the line. Now, this is Matt. Matt with us from Pinecrest in Florida.
Neil, how you doing?
I'm all right. What about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm sitting in traffic right now, actually.
Waiting for what?
Well, I'm trying to get to one of the Home Depots that FEMA's coming to pass out ice and water.
And how long is the line?
Well, the one that I just left, the line was around the block. There were several hundred people in line.
And you're looking for another one where the line you think might be shorter?
Yes, sir.
And what do you need the stuff for?
Well, we have no power, so I'm trying to get some ice to keep the food that I do have cold.
And other people obviously have needs like that as well. Are you persuaded that if power's out for days, even weeks to come, that these kinds of supplies are going to be there?
I think so. I had stopped at a Publix earlier, and while they were running short, they said the truck was coming in tomorrow to resupply them.
Do you have kids at home?
No, sir.
No. Well, at least there's that for you. Wanda, I understand schools are going to be closed for at least a while?
Schools are going to be closed at least through Sunday, and that includes our several colleges here in Broward County. And the superintendent of schools is coming back at 3, and we need to ask, are they going to tack these days on to the end? Because, unfortunately, we've had school out already this year because of storms, and we don't think they're going to just waive the days off.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids may end up going to school a lot longer than they had anticipated.
And if people wanted to get out of southern Florida, they're going to have difficulties. Airports are still closed, for one thing.
Miami-Dade is supposed to be opening up some flights this later on today. Broward is not opening up today, and we don't know if it will be opening up tomorrow. Another problem is at Port Everglades, where we have a lot of our fuel and the cruise ships go in and out of, also sustained severe damage, and there's no power. And if it doesn't get up and running very soon, we don't know what we're going to do about fuel coming out of there.
Okay. Matt, good luck, and good luck to you, and we hope you ride it out okay.
Thank you, sir.
And Wanda, stay with us. We're going to go across the state now to the west coast of Florida, where the small rural town of Immokalee, 20 miles northeast of Naples, was among those also very hard hit.
Right.
Many migrant workers live in Immokalee, at least they did till yesterday. Now, after the storm, many have no homes and no jobs. Recorder David Plasas visited the devastated region yesterday. He joins us now from his office at the St. Fort Myers News Press. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good afternoon, Neil. Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit more about this town.
Sure. I had the chance to go to Immokalee yesterday. It's an agricultural town where people are planning to pick the tomatoes in about a week or two. And so we came in. I came in with another reporter and a photographer. We just started seeing crowds of people lining up who didn't have a job to go to, kids who didn't have schools to go to. And probably the first dramatic scene we saw was a building that had collapsed. This crowd was right in front of the building, and they were there because a woman had died. Apparently a piece of roof had fallen on her head as she was trying to pass into another room. It was a boarding house, and we saw a lot of structural damage, particularly in the trailer park communities, which some of them were absolutely ripped apart. To give you an idea of living conditions there, there are about five people per trailer. They may pay about $280 per week to live there, and they were literally opened up just like a tin can, and people lost everything. Sunday night, there were six shelters open. About 3,000 people were in the shelters. But yesterday, they only opened one of them, Mockley High School, and that has a capacity of up to 3,000 people, very uncomfortably. As of today, that's the only shelter that's open in the area.
So how many people are without shelter?
At this time, we don't have an exact number, but it could be hundreds, could be thousands. And so far, Mockley High School has been able to handle it as a shelter. Other people have gone off to friends' homes. Some workers that I talked to had been in friends' homes, and they actually didn't hear about the hurricane coming until Sunday when a group led by Collier County Commissioner Jim Coletta and the fire marshal and also the Coalition of Immokalee Workers got together, got school buses, and actually got people onto these school buses from their work buses to take them to the shelter, which was run by the Red Cross.
So they were still out in the fields, basically, picking tomatoes, and they didn't even know that the storm was coming.
Well, they didn't know the storm was coming until they were told. They were told in Spanish. They had deputies there to escort them there, just to show the importance of it. Part of it, too, is that either we found that some workers can't read, or there's also the issue that they just didn't hear any media. Yesterday, only one of six Spanish-language radio stations was working. Everything else was dead air, so it would have been hard to get any information out.
David, thanks very much for being with us. Sounds like it's a very dicey situation there.
Thank you very much.
David Plasas is a reporter for the Fort Myers News Press. More on the aftermath of Wilma and what could still come as it feeds into an early nor'easter after we return from a break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about picking up the pieces in Florida now that Hurricane Wilma has moved on. And just ahead, the troubles Wilma is causing and could cause for states in the Middle Atlantic and the Northeast. And later on in the program, the legacy of Rosa Parks. Right now, our guest is Wanda DiMarzo, a reporter for the Miami Herald. She's at the Broward County Emergency Operations Center in Plantation, Florida, where, at least according to the maps that she's seeing put up by local officials, catastrophe is the best way to describe what's going on. Let's get another listener involved in the conversation. This is Mike, and Mike's calling us from Fremont, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Up here in this area, of the country, we get tornadoes actually quite frequently, and people heed the warning. And I guess what's frustrating, I feel for a great many of these people, but what's frustrating is even as far as people in government positions don't seem to take this seriously. And you know, for some of these people, I don't feel bad for them at all because heed the warning, get out of Dodge, help mm-hmm. your neighbors.
Yeah, Wanda DiMarzo, you can certainly hear that frustration. You know, there's a mandatory evacuation order, I think, in the Keys, and I think something like 80% of the people who live there stayed.
Yeah, they did. They just ignored it. I don't know why.
I don't know if people feel they're above, I don't know. I don't know what. I mean, they're immortal, infallible. I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, the other part of that, Wanda, and I assume that these the officials you're dealing with are discussing this, though they decided to, you know, skip the warnings and ride it out, presumably if they got into really, really bad trouble, they're relying on other people to perhaps risk their lives to go in and help them.
That's right. And you know what happened, too, is that once the winds get over like 40, I believe, or 45, fire, rescue, and police are not allowed to go out there. And yet we had people who did not evacuate from the mobile home parks who find that the, you know, the winds are like destroying their home with them in it, and they're calling police. And then police are supposed to go out there and possibly be killed and to try and rescue people who should have been in a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. I don't know how it will be corrected.
It may be a problem of human nature, Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not
yeah.
sure about that. Anyway,
thank you.
Thanks very much for the
sure.
phone call.
Bye.
And let's see if we can get one more caller in from Florida. This is Melissa. Melissa calling us from Homestead, Florida.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the thing that people seem to notice is that common sense isn't always very common, is it?
Not necessarily. Homestead, Florida, visited by Hurricane Andrew not all that long ago.
Yes. I actually was living in New York when Hurricane Andrew happened, thankfully. So I have experienced quite a few hurricanes. This is actually the first one that really shook my husband and I up. The wind was outrageous, and you could just feel we live in a new structure, so it's built with special code to that area. But still, it was a terrifying, terrifying event. And knowing that there was tornadoes in the area,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't possibly plan for that.
No, there's no preparations for that. But what were you seeing as the storm was at its worst, Melissa?
Well, actually, when your hurricane shutters are up, you see absolutely nothing. And that's part of the horror, is that you're in an area, you know, you're closed in, it's pitch black, you have candles going, and all you hear are loud crashes outside. So you don't know, did your car get smashed? You know, what was the loud crash outside? And this is what you have to wait and discover in the morning.
And presumably you're sitting a lot of that time in the dark because the power's out.
That's right. That's right.
And you have to be especially careful, of course, candles and even hurricane lamps, that sort of thing, easy to start a fire.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Like we went down to the first floor of the house and we went into the center of the house so that if there was, in fact, a tornado and it did rip the top of the house off, that's where they said to be. But what I think would be very helpful to people is just to really give them guidance. What I noticed is a lot of people just didn't pick up their lawn furniture, their garbage cans. All that stuff became projectiles in the wind.
Mm.
And, you know, like I said about common sense not being common, that's what I see is just things that could have, you know, been avoided as far as destruction.
Mm.
If people would just would realize that these things would be projectiles, if maybe the media, when the news is going over what people should do, they talk a lot about, you know, have enough water, but they don't really talk about really picking things up and that sort of thing, and that would be helpful, I think.
Okay, Melissa, thanks very much for the advice and for the phone call. Good
luck
to you.
Thank you for taking my call. You have a great day.
Bye-bye. Wanda DiMarzo, I think probably up where you are, you're probably going to have to get used to the idea of getting headaches from the sound of generators.
Yes. Yes. In fact, some of the people up in Coral Springs, because it was one of the hardest hit places, actually drove to Jupiter early this morning to purchase gasoline for the generators.
And this is all going to be quite some time before it's all resolved, and we're going to have to see eventually how much it's going to cost, but tens of billions already, is that the estimate?
They're estimating in the billions already.
Yeah. Wanda DiMarzo, thanks very much for your time today.
And thank you very much for having me.
Wanda DiMarzo, a reporter for the Miami Herald. She joined us from the Broward County Emergency Operations Center in Plantation, Florida. Although Wilma may have left Florida behind, the storm is not finished causing problems. The hurricane's effects are now being felt in the middle Atlantic and northeastern states. High winds, heavy rains, coastal flooding, even snow are expected. Joining us from the National Weather Service in Taunton, Massachusetts, is meteorologist Walter Drag. Good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Where is Wilma now, and how strong is it?
Wilma is still a hurricane, a strong storm that is approximately 400, 450 miles east of Nantucket and heading for Europe this coming weekend.
And not soon enough as far as everybody's concerned.
Absolutely.
Now, as you're saying, it's not going to make a direct hit on the Northeast as it did obviously in Florida and in Mexico before that, but it's combining, as I understand it, with two other storms to feed into this nor'easter.
Essentially, what Wilma did was help to restructure the atmosphere in the western Atlantic back to the Appalachian Mountains in terms of jet stream construct, as well as feed some moisture into a small low-pressure system that was sitting astride Cape Hatteras late yesterday. The combination allowed that low to become much more important than a routine nor'easter for us. It's one of the strongest storms of this year 2005, which has been a season of extremes here in New England. As you may recall, we had the blizzard in mid-January of 2005, and we had one heck of a nor'easter also in late May.
Mm-hmm. And drenching rains just a couple of weeks ago that, among other things, threatened that wooden dam just outside of Taunton.
which has been repaired and replaced, and also all the adverse conditions potential for from that situation have been alleviated.
But there are a lot of other very old dams and waterworks throughout the region.
Yes, but none that we know of that are in any danger of failure. Obviously, it's being always reviewed. In this case today, we are dealing with some minor flooding of several small streams and rivers in southern New England from the nearly 2 inches of rain that has fallen during the last 18 hours from Hartford, Connecticut, across Worcester into portions of southern New Hampshire.
Hmm. Let's get a caller on the line. Now, this is Chris. Chris calling us from Pawtucket in Rhode Island.
Hi.
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
All right.
I'm here standing by my sump pump in my basement.
The sump pump, for those unfamiliar with this, a lovely device, pumps out water from as it gathers in your basement.
Right, and I live on a hill.
And you live on a hill?
Right. My basement never goes wet until we have events like this.
And how bad is it?
Oh, it's not bad here, but for everybody else, I mean, there's a house down the street that last week during the 9 days had, you know, six inches a foot. Last week we had class 4 rapids at the mouth of the Blackstone. That's where, right near my house here.
Not normally a class 4 rapids.
No. I mean, I've lived here 13 years. I've never seen anything like it. There was a guy standing next to me who's been here for 40. And he said, never seen anything like it. And yet we had the driest summer on record. Go figure.
Go figure. Walter Drag, is Chris in for more rain?
Well, the way it's shaping up, this storm will leave here during the night tonight. We have what I think is shaping up to be about basically six good weather days. I think the weekend will be very good. There is something in the works for early November in the northeastern United States. We don't know how it'll evolve. But in the meantime, there is a period of recovery coming up.
Well, if you need any parts for that sump pump, Chris, you might want to order them now.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Christy. And Christy's calling us from Warren in Vermont.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Christy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My heart certainly goes out to the people in Florida, and we never experience weather like that. But I'm driving right now from where I work in Burlington, Vermont, which is about 40 miles from Warren, into a blizzardy, nasty, wet, slushy rain that my boyfriend tells me is snow up at the mountain where we live. So we certainly don't usually get wet snow in October. I've grown up here, and we've had, you know, I could count on one hand how many dry October days we've had. So it's been one thing after another up here. Luckily, you know, most of us are prepared for this kind of weather. We just got to put our snow tires on earlier. But I do notice I have a lot of folks that I work with that, you know, with the snowbirds that can't go home to their winter home now because their homes have been hit by this weather. So we definitely feel those effects.
There's a double whammy for you.
Yeah.
Walter Drag, snow expected in Vermont?
Well, definitely. There will continue to be accumulations through a portion of tonight and several more inches to occur. As a matter of fact, that snow is beginning to fall in portions of the Monadnocks in southern New Hampshire, and we may have a couple of inches at higher elevations during the night tonight. It'll start melting tomorrow. It's not a very cold air mass, but during the snow, it's cold enough to go and stick on roads and make travel slippery.
Yeah.
Monadnocks northward.
Well, Christy,
we're expecting about 6 to 12 inches.
Good Lord.
That's substantial, especially for the where the trees are still fully leaved. That, if you realize that 6-8 inches of snow, there could be tree limbs breaking and power outages during the night tonight.
Well, drive.
We had snow on Saturday, or Sunday, Saturday night that broke tree limbs and we lost power, but that's been about it.
Well, drive carefully, Christy. It's going to be
Could
be dangerous out there.
Thank you so much.
And Walter Drag, we hope your times are less exciting.
Well, we hope for the best for everyone involved here that we go into a peaceful period and then have a gentle winter.
Walter Drag, thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Walter Drag is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, and he was at his office in Taunton, Massachusetts.